Survivor's Guide to True Crime includes discussions of sexually based violence and is not intended for children. Information provided should not be used as a substitute for professional medical or legal advice. Please exercise discretion and self-care. Welcome back to Survivor's Guide to True Crime. I'm Kim.
And I'm Kara. What's in my throat? Why did it sound like that?
I'm not going to answer or comment. Welcome to the question and answer episode. You have questions and we have questionable answers.
Most appropriately titled rendition of this. Okay, but can I tell you before we start, this is a question answer session, but I had shower thoughts this morning.
Oh, okay.
And I think that our listeners will want to hear this. I don't know what y'all want to hear. Who knows? I want to talk about it. And I know Kim will like to talk about it. So I'm just going to talk about it real quick. Okay. I listen to audiobooks and I read things. I'm always reading multiple books at once. And I have a hard time reading a lot of fantasy books because they all kind of blend together. So I was like, I don't want to start another series. What am I going to listen to after I listened to my last book? And I was like, maybe I'll just re-listen to ACOTAR because I don't remember it. Because I have the brain of I read it the first time.
You're a literary goldfish.
Yeah, I am. I read things and they've gone from my memory forever, so I remember nothing. My husband got me the ACOTAR coloring book for my birthday, and I was like, I don't remember any of this. I don't even know what color hair Feyre has. So, absurd, right? So, anyway, so I'm re-listening. I finished the first book. I'm starting the second book. I just started this a couple days ago. And I had this revelation. Spoiler alert, if you haven't read this.
Jump forward by like 30 seconds here.
Yep. Tamlin's not the good guy. So Tamlin, once you listen beyond the second book, you sort of start to hate him. And I think that that is a general consensus that Tamlin is a wambly, nimbly, pimbly that like everybody's like, ooh. I have realized the difference between Tamlin and Rhysand. See, I read it, so.
Rhysand. I listened.
Is that Tamlin treats Feyre like a victim. And Rhysand treats her like a survivor.
Ooh.
Right? So I'm listening to it, and he's like, no, I have to protect you. I can't let you go out. He's like treating her like she's made of glass. He's like, no, I don't want you to learn how to fight. No, I don't want you. Like, just stay here where you're safe and read and paint and do all these things that I can protect you. And Rhysand's like, no, I'm going to teach you how to fight. I'm going to teach you how to read. He's like, you've given enough. You don't need to be protected. So I just had that revelation this morning and I was like, discuss.
There's so many wonderful things. I wish I had a book group, like an actual book club. When I was going through reading those, because literally I was only texting you because you're the only person that I knew that read it. And since I have introduced more friends to the ACOTAR cult, which I apologize for nothing. I remember still texting you and the cringe is very internalized here, but
yeah.
Oh, I love Tamlin.
Everyone does after the first one. You're like, oh my God, I love him.
But that's Twilight and Edward, too. He was treating her like a fragile victim instead of letting her be and just leave us alone.
Yeah.
Leave us alone. So, stand back and watch.
Yeah. As I was listening this morning while I was taking a shower, I was like, oh, this is the difference. This is the difference between someone looking at you and saying, you know, that guy was going to kill you, right? And someone saying, that's really badass. You're a survivor. Would you like to work for me? You know, like insert whatever you have experienced in your life where someone treated you like, you know, you were someone that could easily be victimized again and doesn't have the power to recover from your situation. Like insert anything that someone has done or said to you as the victimology and then the way that you can be treated as a survivor. So I thought it was kind of cool.
I like that. Very nice work.
Yeah, and we've also talked about Sarah J. Maas before, so it's only appropriate.
Very true.
Oh, but when I started the second book, this is something that our listeners will also have heard us talk about. I started the second book, and I started it in a different app. So I listen to most of my audiobooks on Overdrive, which is like the library. I can get them for free. But sometimes Overdrive doesn't have it, so I have to go to Hoopla. And I don't use Hoopla a lot. And so I listened to the first one in overdrive and it saves your listening preferences. And I opened Hoopla and it was on one time speed. And it was like, what a court of mist and fury. Chapter one. And I was like, ah, that's it so slow. I was like, you crank that baby up.
When I was listening to the awful six book series that I also couldn't stop listening to, I was listening to it at 2x speed. And my second oldest got in the car and he was like, oh my God, no, this is awful. What kind of torture is this?
That doesn't surprise me knowing him.
Right. But also, like, I'm not worried about missing things as much.
Yeah, it depends on the content of what you're reading.
Right.
Yeah. Let's see what my current listening speed is. I'm only at 1.5.
That's good.
I could amp it up, but I find that when it gets too high, it gives me anxiety. I can feel myself going, because I have to focus a little bit harder to catch things. And auditory stimulation is like my number one overstimulation thing. And so it's like it's too much for me. It's like I could still get it, but because since you said that you listen on what, 2, 2.5?
Just 2.
Okay.
I have listened at 2.5. I don't recommend that.
Yeah. But I've tried it and I'm like, oh, it actually hurts my brain. It makes my skin crawl to listen to it that fast. So
it's got to be something where I'm dialed in and I'm doing something like with my hands, such as a puzzle or gardening or something else. And then I can listen to it at that speed. But if somebody comes up and starts talking to me, I'm nope, not even sort of there.
Here's my question though about that. Can you just exist and not listen to something while you do stuff? Because I am finding that I have to have noise. If I'm just washing my face or something, it's like I have to be listening to an audiobook, or I'm doing laundry, I have to be listening to an audiobook.
Oh, no, I'm fine without. Actually,
it's like my new form of dissociation.
I oftentimes prefer not having anything going. Mm-hmm. Because then I catch myself actually thinking about things instead of my dissociation is if I am listening to something, I will put things on in the background, such as movies, TV shows that I don't have to sit and pay attention to. But my favorite thing to do while I'm working recently is put on coffee shop sounds, not the music of a coffee shop. It sounds like you're sitting in a coffee shop. And I put on like,
that's really funny.
I know because I work really well when I go and sit like at Starbucks or something, because that's all I'm doing. And it's like, all right, there's got to be something auditory to this too, because I do the same thing on planes. I can't get away. I need to sit and do this thing, but there's also other sounds and some stimulus, like just enough that there's other things going on and I'm not being distracted by them. So yeah, I will sit and play coffee shop sounds. And then if I'm into writing, or something that I'm having to be creative with, I listen to movie scores and only non-lyric movie scores.
Okay, I'm gonna have to try some of these things, because for me, it's brown noise. Brown noise like shuts all the other noise in my brain down. But I'm gonna try some of those, because I've been struggling with trying to find just the right thing for my middle kiddo during school, and I've tried brown noise and I don't think that's it for him. So I'll try. I don't think coffee shop is going to be right for him either. But I'm going to try some movie scores and see if that helps. Like non-lyrical movie scores. That might help him.
Yeah. I just like the coffee shop because it sounds like people are talking, but it's really nondescript. And it's just kind of like some dishes. And then you hear a machine. And it's just enough, but nothing that will be distracting to you. So
love that.
Take it or leave it.
All right. Let's get into the questions. Lead us off, Kim. Take your pick.
So for this first question, I reached out to a sex assault nurse examiner for some expert input. I'm still waiting to get some of this back, but I want to answer this question. As Kara said, it is fairly timely here. So the question goes, paraphrased like this. I've always had trouble going to gyno-related appointments. I end up crying, apologizing for exams. I always prep my doctor by saying that I have a sex assault history and apologize in advance. Tell them it's not them, blah, blah, blah. And the problem is that these types of visits sound like they're very common when pregnant. I think we had talked about this on one of the previous episodes that, yeah, they can feel invasive. This listener was asking, do you have any advice on how not to, quote unquote, freak out the staff on every visit? Have either of you experienced this? How can I be okay I feel alone in this, honestly, and I can't find much info on it. We're starting to try for a child, and she's becoming more scared of the whole thing being probed at, more than even carrying her baby in the actual birthing process. And to you, I would like to say that is okay and valid. Yes. And completely normal. So many medical appointments.
And you're not alone.
No, gosh, no. And that, I think we say that a lot, like, hey, you're not alone in this, but it can feel that way when you're the only one sitting there in that doctor's exam room.
And no one's talking about it.
Right. It's not just you, and that is not just in your head. There are so many things with the medical world, especially, that can make us feel inferior. We don't have all of the answers, or like we're not experts on our own bodies. We're there for answers. We're there to make sure that things are going okay. And not having that control over that scenario and that situation can bring up a lot of the same feelings that you may have experienced during that sexual assault. Even if you are signing the consent forms at the beginning of that doctor's visit, it still feels scary. And I don't want you to think that that's the same kind of thing as actual consent when you are in, you know, a sexual assault scenario where you didn't consent. Just because you're signing those forms does not mean that you can't say, hey, I don't feel comfortable with this, or I want somebody else in the room, or I have questions before you do this, or is that necessary? Those things are okay, but we often don't feel empowered within ourselves to ask or to push back because doctors are presented as an authority figure. And if you are anything like me, I had a big problem challenging authority figures for a long time because that's who you're taught to respect. And it's okay to push back on those. It does not mean that they are always right. I have been in rooms with many authority figures that I know are freaking idiots. So it's okay.
So I want to add, one of the things that I learned through watching Paris Hilton's reality show is that this is one of the primary reasons that she chose surrogacy for her children, is because she did not want to have all of the OB appointments. She was very uncomfortable with those. She has spoken publicly about that being pretty much the primary reason that she chose surrogacy. So there is a public figure that is sharing what she has experienced. And so you're definitely not alone. I will share from my perspective a little bit more about the poking and prodding aspect, which is, with my second pregnancy, by far the worst part for me was when I was in labor, the cervical checks. That was the most painful, most uncomfortable part. That's not the case for everyone, but for me, that was pretty awful. So my third baby, I actually declined any cervical checks. I had one cervical check through the entire labor and delivery, and that was because I was in labor for hours. Days, really, and was not progressing. And so my midwife said, at this point, it would be helpful for me to do a cervical check to know what we are working with. It's not necessary. We can progress without it, but it would be very helpful. It's your decision. So there are providers that are very well versed in giving consent. It's not always the case, but I think that that's something that is worth talking to your OB, expressing those concerns with your OB. Like, if I get pregnant, am I able to opt out of pelvic exams during pregnancy? Am I able to opt out of cervical checks during delivery? And you can do your research, you can find your own information, what you're comfortable with, whether they're necessary or not. I can tell you that I've had two pregnancy and deliveries with them, and I had one without. And so sometimes they're medically necessary, but a lot of the times they're not. So ultimately, it is your body. And women have been having babies for a long, long time. So, you know, that there's options. I say all that to say there's options.
The other thing that I always come back to was Jennifer, my forensic nurse on the morning of my assault, and the three things that she did. You'll hear me talk about this over and over. It was in the first episode, but when Jennifer was collecting that evidence, she did three things. And I think it's great for any healthcare provider. And you can articulate these things to them too. So she told me what she was going to do. So for instance, I need to take a sample of your hair. She told me why she needed to do that. I need to take a sample of your hair to establish your DNA without a mixture. And she asked for my permission. That was third and the most important. Is it okay? So what Kara is just discussing with what her midwife did, I need to check your cervix. I think this is what could be helpful from it. Is it okay if we check that? And then it was left up to her. If you don't feel comfortable with your doctor, with your nurse, with your practitioner, you can change and you should change as much as possible with insurance. And I know all of the other things yes, that come along same. With it. Let's also not totally breeze over the fact that don't apologize. Those folks that are in healthcare because they want to help, I would hope, never, never apologize for explaining what someone else did to you and why that may impact your health, your trauma, your experience of what you are there for presenting. Don't apologize.
And you're not the only person that they have heard say these kind of things. I promise you, you are not the only person that can have an issue with a pelvic exam. I mean, geez, how many women, their first pelvic exam is because they were assaulted? Pretty sure mine was.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Yep.
So, you know, you're not the only person. And they should have different things that they can do to talk you through it. But yeah, it's also not always necessary. So for what it's worth, also, I find most pregnancy visits to be far less uncomfortable than your yearly pelvic swab.
Yeah.
That bitch is uncomfy.
Well, and the more you get to go in and you get to know the nurses or the folks that are there, the more comfortable you start to feel. At least I did. I loved my nurse that I had. And even though the doctor was pretty much in and out, I would jabber with her and felt really comfortable. Let's move on to our next question.
Yes.
Okay.
Kim's favorite one.
We got this one. And I was like, what the heck? So again, we're going to paraphrase, unless you are explicitly stating that you are okay with having your name, age, location, some of that, your ASL included, we're going to keep you anonymous just because, but when I offer that anonymity, unless otherwise stated. So this one, a listener was stating that they had had a rather traumatic year. They had a couple of cancer scares. She lost her mom. So it's been a rough go of it. She said, I find your podcast and dark humor, especially Kara's, amazing and healing. So it's like really okay to use dark humor to heal. I think it works. Make jokes when you want to cry or maybe just cry. And then they apologize. Don't do that for rambling. Don't apologize for rambling. It's our favorite. I was like, what the heck?
I like long stories long. Okay. Don't make long story short. Long story long, please. It was just so funny because before we started recording, Kim's like, just Kara. I'm like, Kim's way funnier than me. What are you talking about? She's got way more dark humor.
No, I mean, like whisper it to you and then you're the one that says it loud. You say the quiet things loud.
It's the autism. I don't know what's societally acceptable. I just say things. I don't know.
I accept you. Yes, dark humor is absolutely okay. There are studies after studies showing that this is a healthy coping mechanism when it is also combined with other ways of healing. So whether that is therapy, exercise, positive forms of healing, it can actually be something that ties people together and breaks down those barriers to make it okay to have more conversations about tough stuff because it doesn't feel as difficult to approach. Humor in and of itself bonds people. And so therefore using that dark humor to bond with other people who have been through traumatic situations is not only okay, it is encouraged.
Yes, absolutely. Could not agree more. Honestly, I think of it as like sometimes things are so ridiculous that you're just like, am I getting bonked? Like, you have to laugh at it sometimes. Sometimes the jokes write themselves also.
Oh, like, yeah.
This is too easy. It's too easy. Like, the me not picking up on serial killer vibes. Like, so we say not one, but two thumbs up. Love it. Okay, so for this next one, it was a quite long email. I'm just going to take out the actual question. It was a longer email where someone was asking about, in a professional field, how do we deal with listening to the needs, the desires of the client, of the victim? And so they described a situation where a child is abused, essentially, and the child is being removed from the situation and wants to move on. And this person is in a position where they don't want to move on. They want to prosecute. Now, to that, I say that there is such a thing as a mandated reporter. And so obviously you have to follow the law when it comes to mandated reporting. But I think it's different from state to state as far as what has to be prosecuted. And assuming that you are exempt from mandated reporting, you are exempt from mandatory prosecution, then at what point are you doing what is right for this person, to push for their rights, to push for vindication, justification for what has been done to this person versus what they want to be done? And honestly, I feel like the answer is, if you legally do not have to push for this, and the person that is the victim is saying that they don't want to move forward, that they want to not prosecute, that you kind of have to do that. It's like when we had a question last season of someone saying, what do we do if we're in the middle of a SANE exam and the person wants to get up and leave? And I know that if they leave, there goes that evidence. Well, you have to let them go. Yeah. So, that's my take. What do you say, Kim?
Well, we just had this conversation with Marley.
Yeah.
What, 2 episodes ago? The survivor, especially when you're talking about anything to do with the criminal justice system, it needs to be survivor-centered. They are the ones who need to make those choices. And unless you are the filing, prosecuting attorney for that county or jurisdiction, it isn't up to you. You can only do as much as you are mandated. Now, again, we cannot give you legal advice. Please do not construe any of what we are saying here as legal advice. For more information, look up your local and state statutes. However, beyond what you are mandated to do, listen to that survivor first and foremost.
Yeah.
Help that survivor, meet them where they are, what you want and what you think you or they should do is not as important as where they are. So listen to them first and foremost.
And I think that it is important to find the balance in between explaining what the consequences are of not moving forward at this current yes. time and what can be done at a later time. Because if it is a situation where it's like, if we do not move forward with this case now, here are some of the consequences. You may not be able to do it later. You may not be able to change your mind at a later point. Here would be your options. If you change your mind in 6 months, if you change your mind in 6 years, here yes. are your options. You know, I think that it's important to have that information so that they can make a fully informed decision, especially if you are talking about someone who is a minor, because we know that the frontal lobe does not fully develop until you are in your mid to late 20s. So that means that they're not going to have a full grasp on the cause and effect of their actions and how it can impact them long term. So it's very, very important to make sure they have all of the information so that they can make an informed decision. And then if they have all the information and their informed decision is, I want to move on, then that's kind of what you have to do. Now, this question did specifically ask about, making sure that the adults are held responsible so that they can't harm other children. That's tough. But at the end of the day, also, there are not great systems in place in our country for holding people responsible when they do things poorly. Even if you look at, I know the agencies that I was working with, the Department of Children's Services and stuff, they don't have good systems in place to, for instance, someone goes and applies for a job. Well, if they've never been convicted of abusing a child, how will you ever know? So it's frustrating because I know there's not good systems. So, everything's broken and the world is on fire. We do our best.
Ugh, Yeah, that one was tough. And we are not always going to have the right answers.
No.
And that sucks. But you know who does? The survivor. They have the answer that works for them at that time. And that's who you need to go to.
Yep.
Okay. Without jumping too far ahead, sexual assault is not always black and white and can look so many different ways. What's your advice for people struggling to feel like their assault was valid? Y'all, Kara and I had a call earlier today to have a guest on in the very near future that had me grabbing my pink freak flag within the first like 2 minutes of this call, waving it profusely because I was so, so jazzed. And I know that this question is going to be answered by the guest that's going to be coming on, and I don't want to give too much away. I will say you have to start with your own validation. We talk about start by believing and the people that you disclose to and how much those responses matter. But if you are feeling like something wrong happened to you, then it did. That is the simplest way that I can put it, because that feeling is going to stick with you no matter what. And you have to approach yourself with grace, with kindness. And regardless of how other people may view that trauma, or, you know, what level you'd put it at, or, oh, it's not as bad as, or it's worse than, it's still trauma. And it still is going to impact you. And your experience, your reactions, and what you do moving forward is valid. So if nobody else is validating that today, let us. What happened to you is valid. And you matter enough to take care of yourself.
For sure. And I think as far as like actual real advice for what can you do, maybe that's where therapy is helpful. Maybe that's where just really sitting with your feelings and like, what is making me feel that way? Why do I feel like it's not valid? Has someone told me it's not valid? Am I comparing it? Like, what is the reason that I feel like it wasn't valid? Do I not remember? Have I been gaslit? Like, what are the reasons that I feel that what happened to me is not valid? And then it comes back to what Kim has said that she has done, which is write down the things that she knows are true about herself. Like, these are the things that I've been told I am, but this is what I know I am. And so maybe there's something in there that you can pull out and that will help you kind of moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. The other piece that you could go even further, pretend that someone that you love, adore, care about came to you and said, this is what happened. What advice would you give them? How would you validate them? Write that down. And I know that this is going to sound silly. Stand in front of a mirror and read it aloud to yourself. There is something about the power. It is, but growth does not come from comfort levels. It can feel really awkward, but there is something to be said about hearing the words out loud, even if you're having to say them to yourself, that will cement those in your brain. It is valid. And treat yourself as you would, you know, Kara and I joke about like, nobody's going to bully you as much as you bully yourself. No one has the capacity to love you the same way that you have to love yourself either. Tap into that side and treat yourself with the compassion that you would for someone else that you love and care about. Say those words out loud to yourself.
Yeah, I love that advice. That's such good advice.
It's awkward. Don't get me wrong.
Can you even look at your own eyeballs in the mirror? Because that's uncomfy. Like, do you stare into your own eyeballs? Or are you just like, all right, I'm looking at my eyebrows, my eyelashes, my makeup looks good.
Who is that uncomfy for? Like yourself?
People with autism.
Oh, okay. Yes. I don't know, that lady's watching me. That's you.
I don't like to look people. I don't like to look at people's eyeballs. That's uncomfy. That's how I know I have autism. I'm like, don't make eye contact. Don't make eye contact. It's weird. But maybe make eye contact every so often. Is that too much? Is it not enough? I've been looking that way a lot. These are actual thoughts that happen inside of my head. This is why I don't need a diagnosis.
All I have is the scene from Finding Nemo. Like, and let me introduce you to my sister, Flo. Hi, how are you? Don't listen to anything my sister says. She's nuts. Yes. And her reflection.
Yes. I mean, like, really, how often do you think about if you are making too much or not enough eye contact in a day, in a day-to-day conversation, how often do you think about that?
Nope.
Never?
I'm alone a lot.
Okay. Let's say you're not alone. Like you're networking.
I don't know. I don't, I guess.
I think this is why I know this is why undiagnosed, but I'm pretty sure because I think about it a lot more than what is normal. Anyway, moving on. This is not about me.
Again, folks, questionable answers.
Just consider who you're asking for advice from.
Ooh, you're going to go first. What is some advice you wish you knew 10 years ago?
10 years ago.
10 years ago would have been 2014.
Yeah, I was a new mom. So I had less than a one-year-old at the time. My biggest piece of advice then was like, hey, bitch, you're not fine. Nope. Get your shit together. Honestly, that's what I would say to myself. Like, I would turn myself upside down and shake me and be like, you're not okay. So my advice would be open your fists. That would be my biggest advice. I feel like I was white knuckling everything.
Mine would probably be to close mine and go straight for the jugular.
Fair. Fair.
So I was thinking about this when I saw that and I'm like, ooh. I have a few. Mm-hmm. First, give yourself some grace. It's okay to start over. In fact, it is encouraged. And it's okay to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to talk about what's happening. It's okay to ask for help. It's okay to leave. And you will be okay. And you and your kids deserve that. That would be my biggest advice. But you are absolutely worthy of love and safety, and none of this is your fault.
Yeah, I think that's, I'm going to piggyback a little bit on what you said of like, it's okay to ask for help, because I think I didn't know how. Mm-hmm. I'm going to add also, like, you're more than a mom. You're going to find purpose again. You're going to find community and you're going to find healing. And it's going to be like a journey. It's going to be ongoing, but it's there.
You know, I just thought of being asked this question. This is something that I think we discussed with the Patreon members. 10 years ago, I would have been turning 29. And this is the birthday where I stood pregnant, making food for my toddler, and couldn't be bothered to help even long enough for my family to sing me happy birthday. That woman, that young mom, that survivor deserved so much better. So much better.
Yeah.
I would say it's not how you ask for help. It's just that you did. I worried so much about, am I asking the right way? How do I ask? I don't want to sound wrong. I don't want to sound like I'm taking too much, or you know, I don't want to make it sound like things are too bad. How you ask doesn't matter. All that matters is that you do.
Yeah.
That's what I would tell her.
So good. All of the deep feelings and things.
Blah.
Blah.
Let's do this one.
Uh-huh.
Just shake it up. Classify your personality as a dog breed, because this person knew that we were dog lovers. I've thought a lot about this.
I've been thinking about it and I haven't thought of one, so I might need your help.
Okay.
But don't hurt my feelings.
You're a cat. You're not a dog. You are a cat.
That's what I thought too.
Whether you like it or not. All right.
That's honestly what I was going to say. I was like, I think I'm probably a cat, but I'm trying to stick to the letter of the question.
No, you are absolutely. I was trying to think of this and I was like, you're not a Chinese crested.
I was like, what is the grumpiest shit dog? I mean, like the dog that's like sitting over there silently judging you. And I was like, I'm pretty sure it's a cat. I just described a cat
named Piss Fingers.
I told you the cat distribution system chose us, right? Did I talk about it on the podcast? Or did I tell you?
No.
I told you on the phone.
No, you talked about it on the live on Patreon.
Oh, on the live. Yeah, the cat distribution system chose us. A couple nights ago, my husband was locking the front door, and there was a cat sitting outside my front door staring into his soul, and he was like, that's weird, and shut the door and went to bed. And I was like, we were chosen, and you shut the door in its face.
You got unchose.
I know. My kids were so confused. They're like, there's a cat distribution system? Tell us more. How did we get chosen? And I was like, it's a mystery. Okay, so I'm a cat. Cool. Got it. If you have an alternate opinion, please inform us, because I'm pretty sure that's accurate.
I was trying to think of this. Golden retrievers, which is probably what I would closely align with. But I'll bite if backed into a corner. And I'm like, I don't know. Is that a lab? No, I'm a freaking mutt, because I like a lot of things. And I am just really excited to be here. So I am a rescue.
I'm really happy someone has come to visit me.
I'm just really excited for this interaction.
Please take me home.
We
will have so much fun. I'll do it.
I do have some trauma in my background, but I'm really trying hard not to shake while I talk to you about it.
I feel like I should be so good at this, because my God, I have these moments throughout the day, every day, where I'm like, I didn't know I was autistic. One of my hyperfixations when I was a child is I would pick up these books of dog breeds or cat breeds, and I would check them out from the library literally every week. I don't know how often you have to return it. And I knew everything there was to know about every dog breed.
That's a hobby. You keep saying hyperfixations. What you are describing is microdosing hobbies. You have certain things where you can't stop. Those are the hyperfixations. You have things that you'll start doing and like you can't stop, or you can't do things or move on from something until you do that one thing right. Those are yours.
Okay, so that's one version of a hyperfixation. Another is like, I must now consume. It's like, I cannot simply eat 5 chips. I must eat all of the chips. I can't just know a little bit about breeds of dogs. I must know every ounce of information there is possibly to know about breeds of dogs. You want to know about a schnauzer? I gotcha. You want to know their average lifespan? I knew all the things. Like, it's not a normal amount of information to know, Kim.
But then it falls out of your brain.
For an 8-year-old. Yeah, no, it's gone forever.
Yeah.
Anyway, carry on. All right.
So you're a cat, and I'm a rescue mutt that definitely has some kind of Sarah McLachlan sound playing in the background, but to a Taylor Swift beat.
Fair. Fair enough.
Cool. We kind of did book recommendations at the beginning, and that's an ongoing question.
Yeah. Anyone who has written a book from our podcast, Sarah J. Maas. Mm-hmm. Oh, I did read, I am working my way through a series whenever they become available, and it's about these, let me just look it up, so instead of just telling you and making approximations. My book recommendation, if you want I think this, like, maybe a tiny, tiny amount of spice. I can't even remember. It's like, doesn't really clock for me. But Lucinda Riley has a series called The Seven Sisters. I love a good series. So it's this guy, this man, and he adopts 7 sisters. Well, yeah, actually, there's 6 of them. But he adopts 6 girls from all over the world, and they all have these, but they don't know anything about their birth stories. And then he dies in these mysterious circumstances. And then they are all left like a letter and information that leads them to discover about their country, their like origin, their family, like where they came from and all this stuff. It's really interesting. And it's one of those things that you can just kind of pick it up and read it. I wouldn't say it's like beach read necessarily easy, but it's not. Sometimes I need a break from the romanticy, because I read so much of that category that it's like they overlap a lot for me and I get confused. I'm like, wait, who was doing what and where and what are the rules in this made up land? So sometimes I need a break from that. So I really like that series if you want something that's a little different. I also love loved Rose Code. I think that it's so good. I like historical fiction a lot. And so Rose Code is by Kate Quinn. She does a lot of historical fiction, like female-centric historical fiction. And so Rose Code was about Enigma code breakers during World War II. It's super, super interesting. And so it was like primarily a bunch of women that were doing code breaking. And so it's the story of a bunch of women. And she loosely bases them, like most historical fiction, they're loosely based on real people and real events, most of her books. So I love Kate Quinn. So those are my recommendations that are a little different. And garbage romanticy. I love it all.
And my book recommendation would be the DSM-5. I love seeing myself represented in literature.
Oh, God. Well, you know, we all need representation. It's important. Okay, now we should tell them about our great, great big surprise.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, there's two. First of all, you won't be hearing a normally scheduled Survivor's Guide to True Crime episode next week. We have a season break. Again, folks, no new episode next week. It will be a season break. Guess why? Go, Kara.
Because I'm going to be in Colorado. I'm going to be sitting beside Kim with the pink light.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
I'm going to pack my little microphone and my baby and my family, and we're going to get on a plane, and we're going to come up to the big town.
The Chamberlains and the Rourkes will be in the same house for a whole weekend.
It's going to be something. It's going to be something.
It'll be something.
Something will happen.
We have a really cool project that is in the works right now that we have become not only the subjects of, but are helping with. And there'll be more information coming out on that soon. Part of what we are doing is working. Well, actually, the entire weekend will be working, but we get to do it together and it will be fun. And Joe's really excited to leave the humidity and mosquitoes.
Yeah.
As he tells us very, very often.
Yeah. It was like too good of an opportunity not to do it because my husband and I both get companion tickets. So whenever I was looking at flying, I was like, wait, the baby flies free. I obviously have to take the boob barnacle, as someone lovingly termed. Yeah, I shared this thing on Instagram. I literally just saw it, which is what reminded me. And it said, if you saw this, sorry, if you missed it, it's this little story that someone shared. It said, I kissed my boob barnacle goodnight and said, see you in the morning. And then I laughed and laughed and breastfed them 16 more times before sunrise. And I was like,
oh my God,
freaking accurate. So the boob barnacle travels with me, obviously. And I was majorly stressed about traveling by myself with a baby and a car seat and like all that. It just felt very overwhelming. I know my sensory limits, and that felt over my sensory limits to be like being glommed on and while dealing with all that. So anyway, so I was like, hey, if you just buy a ticket, then both of the boys can fly for free and the baby flies for free. So, because obviously, you know, I'm going for work, so mine's covered. But exciting. So we're just making a whole little family vacay out of it. And it's two out of my three children's first time flying. So
yes, that's going to be really fun. The kids are all so excited to finally be reunited, to get to meet the baby. And while we are both together, we are going to be interviewing one of my favorite humans and another survivor. And I'm very excited to spend this time together in person for this interview, this project. It's going to be great. So
yay us.
Keep your eyes and ears open.
Go team. Go team cat mutt. Mutt cat?
Mutt cat? Scat? No.
Cat's
Mac? Samsonite. That's way off.
This is what happens when we record it later in the day. You're welcome.
The witching hour is
good luck turning this one around, Kimberly.
Yep. Peace and blessings, everybody. Keep it in there for me. So anyway, we will not have this scheduled episode next week, but we will be on Patreon. So if you're not already joining us there, please hop on over. We'll be sure to go live for our paid members and have all of the interactions and fun there. But I can't wait. I'll see you Friday morning.
Ah! Oh, yeah, it is morning, I guess, because we're like time zones. Takes us an entire day to get home. Takes us like 2 hours to get there.
Come on into the Bermuda Triangle of time zones. Mountain time.
I love it. Can't wait to not have humidity. I agree. And experience all of the seasons in one day. So that's it for a minute. As always, you can catch us wherever you can pin us down and legally follow us, which is social media, Patreon, all the places.
That's a new tagline.
we've had a day. Your girl has had a long day. I spent 18 hours doing homeschool. I've been in front of this computer for 25. I don't know what's going on here.
You're going to need to go lay down. Maybe try to shut your eyes first.
I have to feed people, all of them, with my body.
Oh, God. Well, on that note, have a lovely day. We'll talk to you soon.
Love you. Bye.
Survivor's Guide to True Crime is hosted and executive produced by Kimberly Corbin Rourke and Kara Robinson Chamberlain. If you love what we do here, please don't forget to follow, rate, and review the show in your podcast player. It's an easy and free way to help us and help more people find the show. To learn more about the guests featured or to find resources and information discussed on the show, visit survivorsguidetotruecrime.com. Thanks for listening.
Well, see you later.
Everyone with a diesel and a small dick is driving by at the same time.